The True False podcast is made possible with the support of the University of Missouri and the Donald W. Reynolds Journalism Institute.
Welcome to the True False Film Festival.
Welcome to the True False podcast, presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofeld. In this special episode, the first of our new season, I speak with the directors of the film Voyeur, which is out on Netflix now. Our show will be back in full swing with a new season in mid-January. But for now, we're sitting down with two filmmakers to celebrate the wide release of their movie. Miles Kane and Josh Corey are the co-directors of Voyeur. The documentary centers on writer Gay Talese as he follows Gerald Foos. Foos was a motel owner in Colorado in the late 1960s and 70s who set up the rooms so that he could spy on his patrons from the ceilings. Talese, a key figure in the literary journalism movement, is a man whose life has focused on immersing himself in the stories of others. Voyeur follows Talese as he follows Foos. I began the conversation with Miles and Josh by asking about the challenge of transforming Gay Talese into a subject when he's so accustomed to playing the role of narrator. Miles speaks first.
In one way, it was great, especially in the early stages of filming. I mean, Gay Talese has been a public figure, arguably, for most of his career, for 40-plus years, and is quite used to, very comfortable talking about himself, about his work. That's one side of Gay Talese. He's comfortable talking about the character of Gay Talese, which is his sort of public persona, the well-dressed journalist, the new journalism star. So that was all great, because it's not that's untrue, but it was challenging for us. You know, we're dealing with someone who's
polished. Well, we had discussions early on.
That's Josh.
Like, how do we get Gay out of this? You know, not quite professor mode, but how do we get him out of this? Yeah. This his manner of speaking, where he's very present. He knows he's delivering things, and we were like, well, when does he act his rawest? And the answer was in Denver. You know, when he's in Denver, because when he's in Denver, he stops being the subject.
When he's in the field, when he's at work.
Yeah, and he's had his eyes on someone else. Mm. And that's when everything started to crack open. So that first Denver trip was when we were like, there we go. That's when, you know, there's always a moment when you're like, okay, we got a movie here. And it wasn't really even about getting access to Gerald, although that's a fascinating story. And it definitely made the film much more interesting. But we also got access to Gay in a weird way, because that was when we actually saw this journalist at work, and it changed everything. So we got access to Gerald, and it was fascinating. But we also, in a weird way, got access to Gay for the first time too.
Yeah, it's sort of like his performance of Gay Talese, you know, consummate literary journalist.
It's also what you want in general, obviously, in documentary is, it's like voyeurism. You know, you ask someone to tell you about themselves, and any of us are going to say a certain thing because we see ourselves a certain way. But ideally, as voyeurs with cameras, it's almost always true that you see the true self when people are doing things, you know. Actually, that's a line in the movie from an archive clip of Gay when he's in the controversial heat of Thy Neighbor's Wife. He's on the Donahue show, and he says, you know, you can't listen to what people say. It's what they do. And that's why that's his justification for why he always needs to really go and sort of embed himself in the stories, because he says that's where you're going to see the truth, you know. An interview over the phone, talking to someone, it's almost like they're still in control. You know, they'll tell you whatever they want to tell you, but they can't hide themselves if you're watching, you know.
I'm curious about how you conceptualized and navigated the
power that you both had as filmmakers over both Talese and Gerald, and in some cases with, and control.
You do have to be, you know, assertive. I mean, there's a thing that probably a lot of filmmakers can relate to, where two or three shoots in with the subject, you know, early days. This certainly happened with Gay, where you've interviewed him two times and spent a day shooting B-roll, and then they ask, you know, with all, you know, completely earnestly, they say, so are we done? You know, I've told you every possible thing I can think of. I've told you about my life. I've shown you my home. You know, are we, what else is there? You know, and then it's actually kind of a hard thing to explain to them, to say, no, you've been very hospitable and you've shown us, but we're going to ideally be at this for a couple of years, and we're just going to keep coming and interviewing you again and follow, you know, try and shooting more and more. And, you know, I think that's kind of it's a hard thing to sort of explain why to someone who's not used to the format. I mean, although, you know, theoretically Gay should understand that process, but I still think even in terms of, there's something about the camera that feels like, well, it's recorded everything. So like it's, you have all the material. So, you know, throughout the 4 years, really, you do have to, the story's unfolding, but, and Gay, as it went forward, luckily and happily for us, he would reach out to us and sort of say, when are you thinking of coming again, or this thing's going to happen, would you want to be there? And he started actually reaching out. But in general, we always had to be sort of on top of, even organizing during the New Yorker release, saying, I'm going to stay in New York with you and film, but Josh and the rest of the crew are going to go to see Gerald, you know, and you have to kind of, you are sort of being a bit of a, you're actively making plans and sort of obviously presenting it, not telling anyone they have to do anything, but saying, and you're trying to coax them into the schedule that is most ideal for your production. So there is this sort of constant push you're doing to get people to keep on your timeline as well.
I mean, that's a tough thing about documentary filmmaking too, is that you don't really have control over much. You start the project, and that's, you know, when Gaze says to us, are we done? What's hard is that you can't even really explain why you're not done, because you're waiting for something to happen and you don't know what that thing is even, or you're waiting for an event and all you know is that there's the book's going to get released, but that's, you know, that's a part of the film, but that's not your arc. The arc is everything else, and you're not sure what that is yet. So it's hard to clarify, but, you know, I think that's part of what makes documentary exciting for us, is that it's the unknown. It's scary, but that discovery process is what makes it always fresh and always interesting. And you know, when it works, it's great. It feels great. And it feels terrible a lot, too.
Coming up after the break, Miles and Josh talk about how they conceived of themselves as narrators in the film.
Through that process, you learn who a character is, you dive into their world, and then it's our job as filmmakers to put that character on screen.
Hey listeners, it's Allison, letting you know that this episode of the True False Podcast is brought to you by the University of Missouri. That's also where we produce this show, here at the KBIA studios at the University of Missouri School of Journalism, which is famous for the Missouri Method. So we've got Catherine Wheeler here in the studio. Catherine's a graduate student at the University of Missouri School of Journalism, and she is a producer on our podcast for True False. Hey, Catherine.
Hi.
Thank you for producing this episode.
It's a joy.
And I was hoping you could tell us what you mean, or we say, Missouri Method.
Well, with the J School, we're kind of getting thrown into the deep end right away. I don't know any other place where on my first day of class, I was writing feature stories for the local newspaper, and I'm working at the local NPR affiliate doing stories there are just so many options to really get professional experience even before we go out into our professional careers.
Yeah, the experience stuff is really what stands out, I think.
Yeah.
The True False podcast is made possible by the University of Missouri. This episode of the True False podcast is brought to you by the Donald W. Reynolds Journalism Institute, which is currently taking applications for its 2018-2019 fellowships. Here to tell us more is the RJI Executive Director, Randy Picht. Hey, Randy.
Hey, Allison.
Can you tell us what are the RJI fellowships?
They're a great opportunity for folks in the industry that have big ideas or innovative ideas that they want to try to bring to journalism. And they're a great way for RJI to work on its mission of helping journalism have a long and bright future. Our fellows work on innovative projects that could involve new strategies for the industry, and not necessarily just from journalism. We're always very interested in interdisciplinary projects. We've worked with artists, technologists, entrepreneurs, along with folks from the New York Times and the Washington Post. If it's a good idea that we think can help journalism, sign us up. And speaking of signing up, we just started our search for our next group. The deadline to apply is January 31st, 2018.
That sounds awesome, especially the interdisciplinary part. Are there any projects that you've gotten to witness that you're really excited about?
We did one with an artist that tried to create a piece that could run in the paper that people could take home and frame. It was about gun control. A lot of the interdisciplinary projects get involved with engagement.
Ah, that sounds awesome. Do all the fellows have to live here or stay here in Columbia, Missouri? I mean, it is a booming, thriving metropolis, our fair city, but do you have to stay local for the whole 8 months?
Well, some do, but not everyone. We have both residential and non-residential fellows, and we like to think that RJI offers the most flexible journalism fellowships around.
Very Midwestern of us.
That's right.
The True False podcast is sponsored by the Reynolds Journalism Institute. You can find out more about the RJI Fellowship, including how to apply, at rjionline.org. That's rjionline.org. So we've been at this whole True False podcast thing for a season now, which is kind of hard to believe. And as we look forward to season two, we want to let you know we're looking for sponsors. It's thanks to the work of people here at KBIA and students at the University of Missouri School of Journalism that we're able to produce this show. And now we want to bolster our work with sponsors who can keep us sustainable for seasons to come. If you're interested, or if you know of someone we should talk to, shoot us a line at sponsorship@truefalse.org. That's sponsorship@truefalse.org. Oh, and to you, the listeners, thanks for listening. We're so glad to have you. See you in season two. Welcome back to the True False podcast. I'm Allison Kofeld. Let's get back to our conversation with Miles Kane and Josh Corey, directors of the film Voyeur. Here's Miles talking about the similarities of their work with the new journalism of Gay Talese.
I was always, even early on, hearing Gay talk about his work and his approach to writing. And we brought this up to him during shooting, is how similar it sounded to us when we'd hear him talk about some of the sort of craft of new journalism and the approach being one. I mean, firstly, this is from our first interview with Gay. He talks about how the way he writes is, you know, he has to open with a scene. He thinks of it almost in visual terms. He says, "What's the scene?" You know, and he basically thinks of the stories in as a series of scenes. I mean, I'd be interested to hear him talk about that if there was any influence from it, but it feels well, cinematic or novelistic, mm-hmm. I guess you could say, mm-hmm. from the more literary version. But I was always, and similarly, you know, he'll talk about how direct quotes are not something he feels that he's, you know, has to adhere to, and in fact, almost doesn't like them because there's kind of a harshness, or sometimes it doesn't actually feel like it evokes the truth of the moment that he witnessed, and it almost like shortchanges it. So I we were always just fascinated that by the obvious similarities between that, which doesn't necessarily isn't completely traditional journalism, which is about, you know, what's the exact quote, you know, like just report the information. And so with nonfiction filmmaking, especially the kind we're making, which is character driven and sort of, you know, it's supposed to feel and play like a narrative in some ways. I was just always fascinated by that idea of, I guess you can call it manipulation, which always gets such a bad rap. It feels that it's hinting at untruths. Mm-hmm. Whereas at least our process of editing and shooting, the goal is always to evoke the truth, but sometimes the limitations of the format or actually the tools that come with the format, the ability you have to manipulate, almost gives you more power to hopefully convey the truth in a more powerful way, maybe even than it comes across in its raw form, you know.
Well, you're more trying to get the spirit of the character or the spirit of the moment in a way, you know, and I think that's like Gerald and Anita, you know, at first glance, they're very different people. But after spending a lot of time with them, you realize that what you see in the film, that's who they really are. But if you just spent a couple hours with them talking, you'd get a totally different impression. So through that process, you learn who a character is, you dive into their world, and then it's our job as filmmakers to try to put that character on screen as we know them, as we see them. So it's not the hardline truth per se, but it's, you know, it's the spirit of the character to a degree, or the spirit of the moment.
But and it's interesting to me that Gay Talese doesn't quite grasp that you are not the thing that you're doing, or he doesn't seem to grasp that the thing that you're doing is not so very different from what he does, because of that one scene at the end where he finally is like, they're just cameramen. You know, he calls you just cameramen, right. Which, you know, I think, I don't know.
Well, it gets a big laugh so far in our screenings because it's, you know, it comes off as derogatory, and it's a very funny distinction of they're just cameramen, which sort of reduces us to almost these kind of robot men who just have lenses for faces and are just kind of aimlessly recording images without much of a sense of the meaning. But I've also been interested by what he's really trying to say there, which mm-hmm. I think is highlighting maybe, like you're saying, not maybe fully understanding what we're doing, which I'm not faulting him for, because it's sort of a new format.
It's a relatively new form. Yeah.
And the idea of sort of, I don't totally know what they're doing, you know. So I know what journalism is. I know what I can speak for myself, but these cameramen, which, you know, if he, maybe the more appropriate thing would have been to said documentary filmmakers, but in his vision, it's sort of cameramen, and it implies there's a difference here, and I don't know exactly what those are, but they're different. This is a different beast.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that what do you see as the difference, and also what do you think he might see as those differences between this kind of form that you're working in, and then, you know.
Well, I mean, in all honesty, I mean, that's what new journalism is to a degree. It feels very much like nonfiction documentary cinema. That's what I was really excited about. Nan Talese, his wife, she has a quote from an interview where she says what Gay always wanted was to make nonfiction as interesting and as exciting as narrative fiction was. And that's to a degree what we as documentarians are all trying to do. So it's less about the hard facts and getting the story, and it's more about telling this, you know, the stories of people and getting at that truth, end quotes, you know.
Yeah, but I would push too that that's true. Mm-hmm. And there are some, I think, more subtle, like sly differences. And I think this is maybe where I'm curious about the role of you all as filmmakers and moments when you chose to have your presence be seen or mentioned.
Yeah, I, again, Josh said it earlier, but I mean, and there are obviously films, there are documentary films that use the filmmaker as the main subject. You know, where sort of they go like even, well, obviously like Super Size Me or even Icarus, a new film on Netflix, is about this. The hero character is sort of the filmmaker, and he's the whole film is kind of jumps off of his own experiences. I mean, and it's kind of its own form. And I think our approach is to make it, again, feel sort of like a standalone thing. But we, in this film, we were aware that our presence was an interesting element thematically of, at some point you almost, basically, we wanted to make clear any criticisms or any faults we're showing in Gay Talese as a journalist or looking at that dynamic of who's manipulating who, it seemed only fair or it seemed at least interesting to at least evoke our presence to say anything you can criticize that Gay of, you should criticize us of, because we're doing the same exact thing. We're not trying to, you know, we're not lofty and looking down and saying, look at this man's risks and or mistakes, or, you know, we're very similar, you know, in that way. And because we wanted it to feel natural, and for the most part, again, we wanted to kind of evoke the truth of it. As the film evolved, we did, as our characters got more comfortable with us, they did pull us in more on camera. You know, Gay would start talking to us off camera and saying, or talking about us with Gerald, and obviously it kind of progresses as the film goes, and we our presence becomes even a point of contention.
Or even not using us, but like that's how we cracked that access barrier. Was, you know, Gay needed to be in New York when the article dropped, and he's like, you need to go and keep an eye on this guy, and you need to make sure he doesn't talk to the press, because I think he, you know, Gerald's a time bomb, and the bomb goes off later in the film, but he's like, you've got to go keep this person under control. So again, he's influencing, we're all influencing, you know, and that's when we knew it needed to be a part of the story, because we couldn't hide that. You know, the documentarians to a degree were playing an active role. And so is Gay and the characters, you know, so we're all kind of in this soup together.
Yeah, which is probably true for every film, but again, this film, it just felt that it was neat. You kind of, I think you would be missing something if you didn't go out of your way to sort of reveal yourself. And again, it's subtle. We wanted to keep it subtle or organic to the story that was happening. But it was the truth that we did start to get more and more, involved in essential ways within this kind of triangle relationship between Gerald Gay and ourselves.
Yeah, when I was thinking about it, I would also say that sort of subtlety is what might make it a little bit different than some of the new journalism techniques, is that it's very explicit in most new journalism writing, the narrator.
Yeah, the subjective aspect.
Yeah. We actually, in earlier cuts, we had our presence a little bit earlier, but we pulled back on that because we wanted to let the viewer kind of fall into this more traditional sense of what the film is, and then almost let us kind of creep in. So, and that's, it's in that moment, that's the first moment where you see us as filmmakers. There's nothing funny happening, but it always elicits kind of a laugh or a reaction from the audience. It's like, yeah, if you're going, I'll go with you. And then you see him walking and everyone's like, you know, there's almost always a reaction, but there's nothing really inherently funny or interesting about that.
Well, it's a shock.
What's interesting about it is that that's when the viewer is like, okay, now we're peeling back the onion a little bit, and it becomes a more rich film, I think.
Yeah, that moment of first drawing attention.
Yeah,
And it's the last thing you expect, because you're thinking, ideally, our hope is that you're being lulled into the reality of their story. And to hear suddenly voices off camera suggesting where the plot should go and the subject saying, that sounds like a good idea, let's do it. And then the movie continues in that direction. And sort of, I feel like, of course, people the whole time have known someone's making this movie, but I think there's like almost like a delight or in revealing the maybe obvious but hidden truth of, oh yeah, right, there's someone else driving the wheel of this film we're watching.
That's it for this episode of the True False podcast. Thanks for joining us for this preview of season 2. Voyeur is a Netflix original documentary. You can catch it starting today, December 1st, 2017. We'll be back with the True False podcast in a few weeks. Stay tuned for new interviews and more. And check out truefalse.org to learn more about this year's fest. The True False podcast is made possible by the University of Missouri. We want to thank Josh Corey and Miles Kane for the interview. This episode was produced by Catherine Wheeler and edited by Bram Sablesmith and Ryan Femuliner. Our music was created by Tim Pilcher using sounds of the True False Film Fest. We also featured the song Into the Light by Marissa Anderson. Special thanks to Abby Ivory Gagne. I'm Allison Kofelt. Thanks for listening.